Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I am your host, Eric Christensen, and I thank you so much for listening today. Always remember, go to reallifepharmacology.com and hit the subscribe button and get your free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. It's a study guide that I put together and is absolutely free to you simply for following the podcast. We email you when we've got new podcasts, new content available there. So with that said, let's get into the drug of the day today. And I am going to cover glucagon. So glucagon has a couple of different brand names, Glucagen, as well as Baqsimi. And the Glucagen is an injection, and the Baqsimi is a newer agent that is actually nasal administration of glucagon. What's glucagon used for? There's a couple of oddball things that it can be used off-label for. An alternative to epinephrine in an anaphylaxis-type situation, beta blocker and calcium channel blocker overdose. But by far, the most common use that I've seen in clinical practice is for the management of hypoglycemia. So hypoglycemia is generally defined as a blood sugar of less than 70 milligrams per deciliter. With that said, you may have patients experiencing symptoms sometimes, you know, a little bit higher than that, for example. Think about some of those, you know, symptoms of hypoglycemia. It could be sweating, could be dizziness, shakiness, excessive hunger. Obviously, that makes sense. Fatigue, maybe some little bit of nausea and vomiting potentially in more serious cases. But we don't always give glucagon for hypoglycemia. We really reserve that glucagon for situations where we're concerned about oral intake. So if patients are unconscious, for example, or if they have an altered consciousness where maybe we're concerned about them choking or aspirating if we try to do oral intake. So that's more of the situation where we're going to use glucagon. If we have hypoglycemia and they're relatively alert with it and they're having no trouble eating, obviously that's what we're going to do first is give glucose by oral intake there. Kind of that cutoff line that's defined by the ADA is less than 54 milligrams per deciliter. So obviously we're going to check that blood sugar and see where they're at. Most patients who've been diabetic for a while will probably have experienced a hypoglycemic episode, so they know some of the symptoms when it's coming on and can obviously stop it, you know, before it happens, or hopefully stop it before we get to the point of needing glucagon. So with that said, as we, you know, get into the 50s and potentially lower than that, we're definitely putting that patient more at risk of becoming unconscious because that blood sugar is so low there. So a few pearls about glucagon mechanistically. So glucagon, let's go back actually and let's talk about the pancreas. So pancreas has beta cells and they have alpha cells. Beta cells, that's those are the cells that release insulin, and alpha cells in the pancreas are the ones that release glucagon. So what does glucagon do? Glucagon stimulates glycogen breakdown in the liver and ultimately causes the release of glucose into the bloodstream. So insulin and glucagon kind of play this back and forth role of regulating our blood sugar. So by giving glucagon, we're going to raise blood sugar. That's obviously what we're trying to do there. So how much does it actually raise blood glucose? Well, assuming we get the normal dose, it's usually in the ballpark of 20 milligrams per deciliter. Now, there may be some exceptions to that. Obviously, if we give, you know, glucagon to a patient that's malnourished, for example, they might not have those glycogen stores in the liver. And so they may not respond to glucagon there. So it's important to think about some of those clinical things, particularly in a patient that's maybe not responding there. The primary adverse effect, most common adverse effect with glucagon is nausea and vomiting. So now that's obviously an issue. Let's say we give glucagon, their blood sugars come up some. We can't just walk away and say, okay, they're good for the rest of the day. We've got to monitor those patients, and we've got to get glucose into those patients. Well, that can obviously be an issue if glucagon is causing them to be nauseous. Getting oral intake into them is going to be problematic. So in most circumstances, you're probably going to have to give them IV glucose in patients that have required glucagon. And that if patients are non-responsive to glucagon as well, obviously that's what we're going to do anyway. If they're unconscious and not responding, we're going to call for emergency services and get them access to IV glucose there. So definitely think about that balance of glucose, what glucagon does, and then obviously the adverse effect that's going to come after we give glucagon, or potentially going to come after we give that glucagon. One little myth that I've been asked by students and various things is patients with a high A1C, you know, let's say they got an A1C of 10 or 12, can they have hypoglycemia? And the answer, of course, is yes. They certainly can. I've seen patients with incredibly variable blood sugars up in the 400 to 500s and then down into the, you know, 50s and less. So because the A1C is an average, it doesn't necessarily tell you how high or how low that patient is going. It's just giving you the ballpark average. So important to remember that with A1C, that it doesn't necessarily mean that if a patient has a high A1C, they're not going to have hypoglycemia. So with the different forms of glucagon, there is an injection, and it does take some time to get that injection ready. And if you've got, you know, maybe a husband and wife at home, and say the husband gets hypoglycemia, it might take some time for the wife to be able to put that together, and also take some technical skills and training. And if they don't have hypoglycemia very often, it's not like, you know, they're doing this every day. So that is important to think about if you're prescribing or dispensing glucagon pen, or the glucagon injection there. Can they actually do the administration? Is there somebody to do the administration? On the flip side, we do have the nasal administration, which is a little bit easier to do for most people. I will say there is a tiny bit of difference in the kinetics. There's a little bit slower onset with nasal administration compared to IM administration. I think it's about 13 minutes versus 16 minutes for the nasal there. So, but with that said, if it takes you a lot longer to get the injection reconstituted and ready to go than it does for the nasal, then, you know, that's probably negligible too. So kind of got to look at what you've got going on and kind of decide from a patient perspective, is glucagon going to be used? Can it be used effectively? And does this, you know, patient need it? Or are they, you know, basically living on their own and they're not going to be able to administer it anyway? So thinking about those situations, educating our patients what to do in a hypoglycemic event, really, really important education to do there. And then, of course, you know, backup to glucagon therapy is IV dextrose. So if glucagon fails, we've got to get them to a situation, a healthcare institution, where we can administer IV dextrose. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. So if you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material, We've got a growing list of resources at meded101.com/store, S-T-O-R-E. We've got pharmacotherapy, ambulatory care, MTM, geriatrics, and NAPLEX exam material there. So go check that out. If you're a nurse, nurse practitioner, PA, med student, physician, also go check out meded101.com/store. We've got books on drug interactions, case studies. And if you actually check out the Audible section or the Audible books, you can get your first Audible book for free. So I've got a 10-hour drug interaction book that if you've never tried Audible, you can go do that for free. And all those links are at meded101.com/store. All right, so finishing up on drug interactions. The first two things I think about with glucagon is that balance with insulin. I kind of alluded to it before. So insulin can oppose, obviously, the blood sugar raising effect of glucagon, okay? So kind of that yin and yang situation. Also, you got to think about other agents that might stimulate insulin release. So sulfonylureas, you know, your glipizides, your glyburides, those being the common examples there. As far as other drug interactions go, probably not anything you're going to significantly worry about in an emergency type situation that glucagon would be required for a hypoglycemic event. But there is a possibility to increase warfarin effects as well as exacerbate some GI adverse effects of anticholinergics. Again, something that's probably not high on my radar. If a patient needs glucagon, we're more in the mindset of this is an emergency situation. We've got to figure out how to correct that dangerously low blood sugar through using glucagon and or, you know, getting them glucose, whether that be through the IV or oral in some rare situations where patients may be able to do that after getting glucagon. So, yeah, I think that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you picked up a few clinical pearls with the use of glucagon. Leave us a rating review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Greatly appreciated. Email the podcast. Share us with a friend, colleague, coworker, student, for example. Greatly appreciated to all of you who have done that and help this podcast grow and allow more ears to listen and learn. Go check out reallifepharmacology.com, subscribe and get the free 31-page PDF at no cost to you, and we'll keep you updated as to when we've got new podcast episodes available. And of course, support our sponsor, meded101.com/store, and I'm going to sign off for today. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.